This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. What's at stake in the British elections on June 8th? Voters head to the polls in a snap general election called by Prime Minister Theresa May. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Barely 1 year ago, the United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union in the infamous Brexit vote. Former British Prime Minister David Cameron proposed the referendum almost as a dare. The pro-EU Conservative Party leader clearly didn't think the so-called leavers would emerge victorious. After the Brexit vote, Cameron stepped down and fellow Tory politician Theresa May took over the reins of power. In March, May invoked Article 50, triggering the process by which the United Kingdom will leave the European Union. However, in an apparent bid to increase her parliamentary majority in advance of EU negotiations, May decided to call snap elections scheduled for June 8th. Despite her narrowing lead against Labour Party challenger Jeremy Corbyn, May is still favoured to win. Well, with us to discuss the wider significance and implications of the elections for Britain, European Union and the United States are Toby Harnden. He's Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times of London, and James Astill. He's Washington correspondent for The Economist. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Toby Harnden, first to you. Remind us why Prime Minister Theresa May called these snap elections in the first place.
Well, I think she wanted to increase her parliamentary majority. She had a majority of, I think, 17. And going into the EU negotiations, she wanted to have more flexibility, not to be beholden to a small number of MPs, maybe on the hardline Brexit side, who might have sort of limited her room for manoeuvre. But it's one of those cases, a bit like David Cameron, be careful what you ask for, because it looks like at the moment that strategy may be backfiring.
Because she is not as high in the polls as
well,
she thought.
Well, she was about 21 points ahead coming in, and it was always natural that would come down, but there are some polls now that are putting it as close as 3 percentage points ahead. I mean, I think it's still a fairly faint possibility, but there could be a hung parliament where she has no absolute majority, in which she would be in the worst possible negotiating position.
James Astill, turning to you, anything to add or subtract to why Theresa May called these elections and where she stands in the polls to date?
No, I think Toby's absolutely bang on, but I mean, I just underline that Theresa May became Prime Minister after the trauma of the Brexit vote with an extraordinary kind of fair wind behind her. She was not well known in the country, though she was a veteran Tory politician who'd held important jobs in the cabinet, had been around for a long time. She seemed a reassuring presence, and she made a number of sensible moves as she became Prime Minister. She talked about reconnecting the party, which had been previously run under David Cameron, by well-educated, cosmopolitan, very metropolitan elite figures, reconnecting it to the sort of middle England voter that the Tory party had traditionally relied upon. And this went down extremely well. But what this current election campaign has done really is it mostly exposed what a mediocre politician Theresa May is. She is not in command of the wide array of government policy. Her understanding of business and economics seem to be particularly poor. She's not sure-footed. She's not confident of her brief. And she's not a terribly attractive or charismatic figure either. So I think that that slide in the polls, that closing of the gap in the polls between Labour and the Tories that Toby referred to, is really a natural adjustment as voters come to terms with the fact that they knew the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, and they didn't think very much of him. They didn't actually know the Prime Minister terribly well, and it turns out they don't think much of her either.
Well, let's pick up on that, Toby Harnden. Based on what James Astill said, that Theresa May turns out to be more of a mediocre politician. We've heard the word wooden used to describe her. And yet, she says that she can drive the harder bargain vis-a-vis Britain's exit from the European Union, getting Britain, you know, a better deal. So how do those two square?
Well, I think it's difficult. I think this is the problem she's having. I agree with the word wooden. There are, I think, some parallels to Hillary Clinton in terms of her electioneering. I mean, some of the answers to questions Theresa May has been giving recently have been almost comically bland, content-free. And it seems that she wants to avoid making a mistake. So the most recent debate, she didn't turn up, so the floor was left to Jeremy Corbyn, who decided at the last minute to attend. He previously said he'd only attend if she would. And so she was sort of missing in action. And I think that, to me, speaks to this sort of cautious, risk-averse way of running an election campaign, which is very difficult. She's also got tangled up on the whole issue of Brexit. She says she wants to drive a hard bargain, but she says that no deal is better than a bad deal, so she wants to, you know, preserve the option of walking away from the table. And just to pick up on what James said about Jeremy Corbyn, I think the electorate did know Jeremy Corbyn. He's a sort of far-left figure, almost comically portrayed in the British press. You know, we can argue about whether that's fair or not. You know, a past supporter, frankly, of the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, which the Tories, I think it's a mistake, are trying to make a big deal of at the moment. But when you are portrayed as a sort of a cartoon, as Jeremy Corbyn was, and as James says, Theresa May had this sort of reputation, sort of slightly nebulous, but as a steady hand, a, you know, person of great experience and gravitas. But, you know, when Jeremy Corbyn has sort of turned up as a human being who can sort of laugh and be more relaxed in a way that Theresa May can't be. And so I think Jeremy Corbyn has almost benefited from the caricature that he came in with. Now, he still has, you know, a lot of problems, and it's very hard to see Jeremy Corbyn as a British Prime Minister. But, you know, you have to say it was very hard to see him as a Labour leader. It was very hard to see Donald Trump as a Republican nominee. It was very hard to see Donald Trump as, you know, the President of the United States. So there has to be sort of some humility, I think, amongst journalists and pollsters in this picture as well.
Turning back to you, James Astill, for your take on how, given her characterization as rather mediocre in your terms, wooden, not as great a politician, very cautious, how can Theresa May drive a hard bargain vis-a-vis Brexit negotiations?
Well, she can't. But that, first of all, to go to the sort of fundamentals of the Brexit issue, is not because she's a fairly unimpressive politician, which she undoubtedly is, in my view. It's because the British negotiating position is impossibly weak. Britain has already announced its commitment to leaving this successful, large, complicated trade union, by far its biggest trade partner. And it now, based on leverage that it appears to exist only in the minds of some of the more dogged Brexiteers, wants to try to nonetheless negotiate some of the benefits of that membership, even as it tries to absolve itself of the inevitable costs of being part of an economic union. So there really is no prospect of the kind of improving deal for Britain that Theresa May has held out as a promise to British voters. And I think that this is the sort of grand duplicity of the Tory position. And it should be by far the biggest issue in the campaign. The status of the Brexit negotiations, Britain's future vis-a-vis the European Union. It is the only really important issue in this campaign. It dwarfs all others. But Theresa May has spoken in the most general and extraordinarily obscure, wishful terms about the Brexit negotiations, what she would stand to do with the kind of deal that she would produce for Britain, an impossible dream of improving Britain's economic terms vis-a-vis Europe. And she's been allowed to get away with that to a certain extent because Jeremy Corbyn has produced nothing very much better. And so I think the necessary, because inevitable, education of British voters when economic reality dawns and they realise that Britain is heading for a clearly impoverishing, clearly diminishing role vis-a-vis the European Union has been deferred. And I think that that is a serious failing of both the main parties in this election campaign.
Well, back to you, Toby Harnden. Aside from Brexit, which clearly is the biggest issue in the election, are there any other issues at play and that could be determinant?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, a lot of social issues. So Theresa May has got sucked into allowing herself to be portrayed as sort of not liking the poor and trying to take free state aid away from people. So she's been accused of, you know, cutting free school meals. It reminds me of sort of Margaret Thatcher, milk snatcher back from the 1980s. These are not things you want to sort of be attached to yourself, particularly as she was the Tory politician that characterised the sort of old-style Conservatives as the nasty party. So she wanted to be seen as that sort of more human face. We've had a terrorist attack in Manchester, which has, I think, been very important. It was a difficult moment for Jeremy Corbyn, but I think he seems to have got through it. I mean, traditionally, I guess, terrorist attacks, national security coming to the fore, those are things you would expect, just as you would here in the United States, to benefit Republicans, that they would benefit Conservatives, particularly with somebody like Jeremy Corbyn, who's, you know, a hard left, anti-war, anti-American political figure. But I think the Conservatives have gone slightly down the sort of rabbit hole of Jeremy Corbyn being soft on terror through the lens of his long-established links with the Irish Republican Army and their political representatives in Sinn Féin and the Troops Out movement. And I think for voters who are younger than, I don't know, about 45 or 50, we've had 20 years or so of relative, you know, imperfect peace in Northern Ireland. We've had Bill Clinton speaking at Martin McGuinness's funeral. Martin McGuinness was a Sinn Féin and an IRA leader. And so the IRA has been sort of brought in from the cold. So it feels like a very backward-looking old argument. And this is just generally part of a very negative strategy from Theresa May, reminiscent somewhat of Hillary Clinton saying Donald Trump is unacceptable beyond the pale. And so it's not a positive message about Theresa May. It's like the campaign of chaos from the Labour Party, this loony left-wing Jeremy Corbyn. And I think voters these days pick up on that. They're like, let's hear what you want to do. You know, let's hear something positive.
Before we go to a break, back to you, James Astill, for your take on other issues at play in the campaign, notwithstanding the fact that Brexit is probably the biggest one.
I think all of the issues that Toby raises are important. The social issues, but funding of public services, the stretched condition of public services. But they do all of that conversation takes place, whether politicians and voters like it or not, in the context of this enormous seismic change that's about to undergo Britain in terms of its foreign policy, in terms of its economic policy, which is to say its withdrawal from the European Union. And just to illustrate that point, the only way, I think, that one can make sense of this British decision to leave the European Union is if Britain wants to become more like the Thatcherite vision of Britain, with an extremely economic competitive country which has little regulation, which has a very sleek and small state, as small as you can manage it, which thereby evades lots of European regulation in order to make the cost of doing business lower and the opportunities for boosting growth higher. That is the only way that one can sort of understand the logic of leaving the European Union for the British economy. But both parties in this election are promising exactly the opposite vision for Britain and its economy. They talk about expanding public services, increasing the role of the state, the size of the state. It seems that taxes will go up whoever wins this election. If Labour wins the election, the Labour Party are promising the highest tax rises since the 1970s. So that is to say, at the same time that Britain is preparing to leave the European Union, British politicians are promising to make Britain more like that sort of hidebound, rather statist, rather highly taxed economy that they apparently decry in Europe. So Britain is promising to become more like some European economies, even as it's trying to disengage from them because it doesn't like them. It makes no sense at all.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Toby Harnden, he's Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times of London, and James Astill, from whom you just heard, he's Washington correspondent for The Economist. And we're discussing what's at stake in upcoming general elections in Britain. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Alison Almeida from Brazil. Obrigada. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Toby Harnden, to discuss what's at stake in the British elections on June 8th. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, both Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour Party candidate, and Theresa May, the Tory Party candidate, are pro-Brexit, notwithstanding she was against it before she...
Right. This is an important point. Okay. I think this is an important point in the background to this. Theresa May campaigned for Remain, but she was very lukewarm. You know, she wasn't one of the sort of hard campaigners for Remain. She tried to sit on the fence somewhat. Jeremy Corbyn also campaigned for Remain, but there was a lot of suspicion that secretly he wanted to leave. Now they are both for Brexit. They sort of accept the referendum results and they want to move forward on that basis. But there are, you know, questions about exactly where their heart is, as there is, you know, with any politician who was sort of for something before they were against something, or vice versa. But I think that's very much part of the backdrop here.
Right. Well, that leads me to ask you, what's the mood among the Remainers? I mean, this is a large segment of the population in Britain. I mean, the vote was quite close, and there's quite a bit of regret, I think, among people. What's the mood?
I see it from friends a lot on Facebook, and, you know, maybe that's my metropolitan bubble from, you know, back home. But, I mean, a lot of absolute, you know, the world is ending. I mean, sometimes they're sort of mocked as Remainers, you know, people who want to have another election. A lot of these people are drawn to the Liberal Democrats, who are very pro-EU, and one suspects, you know, would, if they held the balance of power, would try to get another referendum. It seems to me to be a lost cause. But, you know, there are a lot of people who feel very excluded. There's some people who argue that the Brexit campaign, the victory for Brexit, was based on sort of manipulation and false statistics. But, you know, I think really that ship has sailed, and the benefits of actually trying to refight a referendum a year ago are not considerable.
Has that ship sailed, so to speak, James Astill? I mean, what's the mood, in your view, among the Remainers, so to speak? And what happened to the so-called Lib Dems, you know, the Liberal Democrats? They're so low in the polls. Is there any chance for other parties on the political landscape, like the Liberal Democrats, to emerge, have a greater voice?
First of all, has the ship sailed? Is it clear that Britain is not going to remain in the European Union after all? I think that that appears to be the case, certainly, and certainly there is no open political question about revisiting the British membership of the European Union, having a second referendum. And the clearest illustration of that is quite how badly the Liberal Democrats have fared in this campaign. They are the third party, much smaller than the other two. As Toby said, they're broadly pro-European, and they reserved a right, if you like, in their manifesto to hold a second referendum, to ask the British people, after the terms of Britain's withdrawal from the European Union had become clear in a negotiation, whether they wanted to accept those terms, whether they still wanted to leave the European Union on that basis. Well, the Liberal Democrats not unreasonably thought that that might be a popular pitch to the 48% of British voters who didn't want to leave the European Union in the referendum, but it's turned out that it's not popular at all, that most of that 48% is resigned, wearily resigned to process that cannot now be turned back, to leaving the European Union, and just wants to see in power the most able government from the choices available. So the pool of voters prepared to vote mainly on a prospect of revisiting the referendum question appears to be tiny. The Liberal Democrats started out somewhere between 15 and 20% in the polls, but now they're way down to below 10%. In some polls. So the possibility of Britain not withdrawing from the European Union, after all, is not an open political question. However, and I think that I'm in a quite lonely position in thinking this, it does seem to me that we don't yet know the political impact of it becoming clear to British voters that they can't have what they have been promised, a tidy withdrawal from the European Union, a cost-free withdrawal from the European Union, and a prospect of more prosperity once Britain has left the European Union. Once that painful reality begins to dawn, I think that it would be hard to predict the response, especially because it will be to a certain degree determined by the popularity of the government of the time, and I think that Theresa May is not going to run a popular Tory government in Britain. So I think that there is a degree of uncertainty for the future, but it's not an open political question in this campaign.
Another big challenge, Toby Harnden, will be negotiating this withdrawal, because the so-called tidy withdrawal that James Astill spoke about, a cost-free withdrawal, is all the more difficult, perhaps, given recent remarks by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, in which she says the European Union is now more or less on its own after talks with President Trump when he was in Europe. She says that she doesn't feel she can really trust the United States nor the United Kingdom to really have their back. To what extent do you think these remarks by Angela Merkel, saying that Europe must unify in response to Brexit and uncertainty around U.S. policy under President Trump, to what extent do these remarks make it all the more difficult for negotiations by the United Kingdom with the EU?
I think it makes it a lot more difficult, and it's a reality check that the European Union does not want people to leave. I mean, there are 27 members left, and so they don't want Britain to have a smooth ride. And they're not about to give Theresa May or the British government or the United Kingdom a sort of nice pat on the back for the Brexit vote. They want it to be painful to send a message to other countries. And, you know, by definition, the European Union, you know, minus Britain, has got different interests from a post-EU Britain. And that's the sort of reality that Theresa May and Britain and maybe Jeremy Corbyn, if he did become Prime Minister, just have to deal with.
How do you see that, James Astle? How much more difficult are negotiations now in light of remarks by German Chancellor Angela Merkel?
Well, I don't think that they're more difficult because of those remarks, but I agree entirely with Toby that those remarks represent a reality check. Britain doesn't have a strong negotiating position. It hardly has a negotiating position when it comes to trying to persuade those many European countries to soften the terms of membership, weakening the European Union, to reward Britain for turning its back on the Union. So I think that Angela Merkel's words underline that truth.
All right. And Toby Harnden, how do you see the so-called special relationship now, that is the UK-US relationship, under President Trump and Theresa May, should she emerge victorious?
Well, the special relationship, I think, as ever, is complicated. I mean, there is an opportunity for Britain under Theresa May and being outside the Union to be closer to the United States, because Donald Trump is pro-Brexit and in a very kind of superficial fashion and believes that he called it right and he predicted it, and he called his own campaign, you know, Brexit plus plus, and he had Nigel Farage on the fringes of the American presidential campaign.
Nigel Farage being the
former leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party. And so, but how that actually translates into a practical deal for Britain, I mean, President Barack Obama famously, using the British word queue rather than line, said that if Britain voted for Brexit, they would go to the back of the queue in terms of a trade deal. Donald Trump has talked up a trade deal. There's no sign of it right now. Donald Trump is America first. His mother was Scottish and he likes the Queen. But whether that actually translates into something concrete for Britain, I am somewhat doubtful about. And it's Donald Trump is very, very unpopular in Britain. He's almost this caricature of the ugly American, if you will. And Theresa May's very chummy meeting with President Trump early on in the Trump administration, when they were photographed holding hands, that's been difficult for Theresa May.
And the last word to you, James Astle, on the special relationship as we go forward.
Well, I think that we should pause and be clear what the special relationship is. It's an extraordinarily close cooperation between the intelligence agencies of Britain and America and a less important but still notable military cooperation between Britain and America. And of course, there's some cultural affinity too. Other than that, it doesn't really exist in any meaningful strategic sense anymore. And I don't see any prospect for a closer transatlantic alliance between Britain and America under President Trump, or as a result of Britain's exit from the European Union, the impending exit. And this proffered fruit of Brexit, fruit of Donald Trump's preference for bilateral trade negotiations of a UK-US free trade agreement, it seems to me to be a figment. There's no possibility of it being seriously thought about, or certainly not negotiated, until after the terms of Britain's withdrawal from the European Union became apparent a couple of years hence. And it's also, when you think about it a little bit, hard to see mutual wins in that negotiation between Britain and America anyway, especially under a Trump administration, which was always looking for American advantage and will never cede the possibility of advantage to its co-negotiator.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Toby Harnden, Washington Bureau Chief for the Sunday Times of London, and James Astle. He's Washington correspondent for The Economist. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Thomas Blondet. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.